AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Malcolm Honlein. And we're very pleased to welcome Ambassador Dennis Ross, former special assistant to President Barack Obama, concentrating on the Middle East, of course. He's now the William Davidson Distinguished Fellow at the Washington Institute. We speak of Iran and the sanctions. Malcolm?
Yes, thank you. Dennis, thanks for being on. Rouhani's chief of staff has made reference to the agreement in principle to lift 1,000 sanctions. We know that some were released early on. Where do you see things standing now in terms of the current negotiations and the election of Raisi's impact, given his hostility to the U.S. and that he's saying he won't meet Biden, he doesn't want to negotiate, et cetera? Do you see that their ability to go to deal with the nuclear program and the others, ballistic missile, et cetera?
I think the Iranians want sanctions relief, but I think they've also adopted a kind of tactical approach where they're signaling or trying to convince us that they're very patient about getting sanctions relief. In the meantime, they're building up the pressure on us and everyone else because their nuclear program continues to advance. They have largely cut off the IAEA, which was the signal achievement for those who were very strong supporters of the JCPOA. They saw it was the most important verification system built into an arms control agreement. So what we see is Iran enriching at levels that it should not be enriching to. The 60% in itself is wholly illegitimate. The Secretary General, Director of the IAEA, said there's no legitimate civilian purpose for that. While they haven't done a lot of enrichment at 60%, nonetheless, they crossed the threshold. They are enriching in much more significant numbers at 20%, which is also the dividing line between low and highly enriched uranium. So what you see is that the advance of and progression of advanced centrifuges, four cascades of advanced centrifuges, they're trying to create a sense of a march of their nuclear program without the same kind of eyes on it as a way of putting pressure on the administration and the other members of the 5+1 to, in effect, give them more in terms of sanctioned relief than they're entitled to under the JCPOA, why, in effect, they give up less. Because you can't undo the knowledge they now have in terms of the advanced centrifuges. So I see it as a tactical approach as it relates to getting back into the JCPOA, but on terms that are more favorable to them. And they're very clear. They don't intend to negotiate on missiles or on their behavior in the region. That's what Raisi said. That doesn't mean that won't happen, but it means that's the posture they have. I expect they want sanctions relief. When they feel they've played out the string as much as they can, then I think we'll see an agreement back in it. I still believe that'll happen sometime this year. The administration is not giving in to the pressure at this point, but we'll see what happens.
Dennis, the proliferation of missiles and the arming of Yemen, the arming of Syria, is that part of the discussion in Vienna, to your understanding? Is that on the table for this reawakening of the JCPOA?
I don't believe it is now. I believe it is part of the administration's agenda for the follow-on negotiation. The position of the Biden administration all along has been, we will go back into the JCPOA on the basis of compliance for compliance. And once we're back in the JCPOA, we want to pursue a longer and stronger agreement, one that deals, A, with the sunset provisions that lapse in 2030, meaning after 2030, there are no limitations on the size or the quality of the nuclear infrastructure and industrial base that Iran can have. So the administration wants a longer agreement, and they want a stronger one that deals with these areas that haven't been covered by the JCPOA, including ballistic missiles, because after all, those are a delivery vehicle for nuclear weapons, and what Iran is doing in the region. Because if you don't deal with what Iran is doing in the region, sooner or later, we're going to have to sanction them on that as well. And that will obviously create problems for whatever it is you've done in terms of reconstituting the JCPOA. So it's not being covered in Vienna now. It is, from the administration standpoint, what would be a follow-on negotiation. The Iranians are saying they don't intend to do a follow-on negotiation, but that's where we are right now.
And how do you think the withdrawal from Afghanistan and the perception of diminution of commitment in the Gulf and et cetera, how does this relate to where both Iran and perhaps Iraq assess America's political and military footprint there?
I think there's a general sense that the U.S. wants to be out of the Middle East, which did not begin with President Biden. It certainly existed under President Trump, and it was even seen, I think, with President Obama's pivot to Asia as, again, an indication of wanting to be less engaged in the Middle East. The withdrawal from Afghanistan certainly plays to the perception of the U.S. being inclined to withdraw from the region. We are making it clear we don't intend to withdraw from Iraq, and yet I think what you see happening in the tit-for-tat with the retaliation of the administration against three sites this week, two on the Syrian side of the border, one within Iraq itself, the Syrian-Iraqi border, one within Iraq itself, and then what was pretty significant artillery and rocket fire against the oil fields in Deir ez-Zor, where we have a presence, and we returned what I would call counter-battery fire to the source. All of this is also designed, I think, by the Iranians to try to push us out of Iraq at a time when they see or at least believe that we really don't want to be in the region.
Dennis, does the JCPOA reawaken longer and stronger? Does that in any way change the Abraham Accords or limit the Abraham Accords?
It does not, and it should not. We should be building on the Abraham Accords at the same time. To really get at the heart of what you're asking, we need to be sending a message, not just in words, but in actions, to the Iranians that make it clear. The president said when he was with President Rivlin of Israel that the Iranians will not get a nuclear weapon on his watch. I would like the administration to go beyond that and say we will not allow the Iranians to have a threshold nuclear weapons capability. I think what the Iranians want is to be in a position with Japan, meaning acquire the capability to be a turn screw away from having a nuclear weapon, to be able to say they don't have a nuclear weapon, but be in a position where they could confront the world very quickly with a fait accompli. That's a threshold nuclear weapons capability. I think we should be reaching an understanding with the Israelis on what's the definition of a threshold nuclear weapons capability. It can't be Japan. It needs to be much less. And I think it needs to focus on the size of the nuclear infrastructure that we are prepared to live with. And what we're not prepared to live with, we should be communicating privately to the Iranians and then publicly to the world that we will not allow them to have that, and we will use any and all means to prevent it. That should be one part of what we should be doing. The other part should be doing building on the Abraham Accords as a way of building increasingly the coalition against the Iranians in the region, but also building a coalition of success. Think about this. Think about everywhere where the Iranians have a presence through their militias and they have leverage in the Middle East. Every one of those states, Iraq is in a state where it's largely paralyzed because of Iran. Syria is obviously a failing state. Lebanon has been turned into a failed state. And Yemen is a failed or failing state. Hardly an example of what you want the future to be. Wherever Iran is, your future looks very grim. And I think we should be emphasizing the coalitions that are building prospects of success on the one hand, and we should be raising the cost of what Iran does in the region, and we should make it very clear we will not permit Iran to become a threshold nuclear weapon state, and we'll use any and all means to prevent it. The world should get used to that. The Iranians need to understand it.
30 seconds, Malcolm, quickly, please.
Just quickly, how do you interpret Abbas's visit with King Abdullah? What is the relationship with the kingdom and the new Israeli government?
30 seconds, Dennis.
Look, the only Arab leader with whom Abbas has a decent relationship is King Abdullah. This is about trying to shore up the one relationship that he actually has.
Dennis Ross, Ambassador Dennis Ross, former special assistant to President Obama, now the William Davidson Distinguished Fellow at the Washington Institute, Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.